today, I want to share with you an idea by Rabbi Sacks, which is very interesting. We'll get to that towards the end. And also Rabbi Daron Peretz. She heard this from him last week on Thursday. He's a really gifted speaker. If you have not heard him, I don't know, he has like these 3 or 4 minute videos sometimes online, and they're excellent. He really is spot on. And then I guess his thought kind of sparked other questions I had. So I guess it's like sort of a little bit of a combination of everything. So we're going to take a look at Perek Bet of Shmos today, which is the birth of our leader. And there are so many amazing things that happen in these 14 or so psukim that it's tough to really understand, like, what exactly is the Torah trying to get at? What is the purpose, and what should we be focusing on as a result of this? So I hope that when we're all finished, we'll have learned more, and we'll have a better sense of what the Geula is, and perhaps an idea or two to take home from it. So we start from the beginning. Vayelech ish mebeit Levi, vaykach bat Levi. So a man from Beit Levi went and took a daughter from Bat Levi. So there's a lot of problems with that pasuk. First of all, why is it anonymous? Why not tell us that Amram took Yocheved? Right, we're going to find out anyway that Moshe's father is Amram and Moshe's mother is Yocheved. So why leave it vague that way? And also, Vaykach Bat Levi, he took the daughter of Levi. Like, let's call it how it is. She is no Bat Levi. She's in her hunt, according to like the count that she was born Bein Achomos when Yaakov arrived in Egypt, she's about 130 years old. So she's far from a young girl from Bat, you know, from Levi. Vatari Shavatelet Bain, Vatero To Kitov. And she becomes pregnant and gives birth to a son, and she sees that he is good. Okay, also good questions about that. What does it mean, Kitov? Most people, when their child is born, think that the child is good. It's very rare that someone looks at a child and says, oh God, right, this is going to just be a bad one, right? Or, it's like the famous, like, you know, there's no such thing as an ugly baby. It's very rare that someone, like, comes out and says, oh God, this is an ugly baby. Okay, so, but Vatera to Kitovu sees that he's good. So what Rashi says, what's Kitovu? That he was born with a bris milah. Okay, but it's Bneyu Shlosha Yerachim, and she hides him for 3 months. It's possible. I can't imagine that this is my own pshat. I must have heard it somewhere along the way. But it's possible that he's just a good, quiet baby, and that would probably be a better pshat. Why? She is able to hide him for 3 months because he is he's a good, quiet kid. You know, it's funny when Malki and I talk about, like, one of the, you know, the big differences between living in Israel and living in America. So thank God there's a lot of really, really wonderful differences with no regrets. And I have to use the word and not but. And because we live in like one of these driveways with 20 or so families or 30 or so families in close quarters, and we have people behind us, there's just a noise factor that doesn't exist in America. Like, when we were living on Plymouth Street, barring someone making, you know, like, driving with music on it, like, really late at night, you really didn't hear anything from any of the neighbors. So we have, like, someone who lives above us, like, on the street above us. They have a kid that cries all the time. And they must keep their window open. And their window is like, you know, almost even with our bathroom window. And so there often are times where, like, early in the morning, late at night, it's as though there's a newborn in our bedroom. And, like, we've done that already. And we're, like, well past that. But Vatera to Kitovu, right? She sees he's good. Why? Because Vatit Spinesh, so Shai Yerachim, he's quiet and she's able to hide him for 3 months. But Papasa Gimavalu Yachlo, that's Pino. But she can no longer hide him. And she puts him in a teva. We've definitely discussed this many times before. Teva only comes up how many times in Tanakh?
Twice.
Here and by
Noach.
And it could not possibly be any different because Noach's teva is like this massive, massive boat. Talk to Naomi Hollander's father if you'd like to have more information on what the boat looked like. He's got, you know, he figured out scientifically what, you know, how it must have been built, not the dimensions the Torah tells us, but how it must have been built in order to not sink. So that's a teva. And this is like a basket. I don't know. I always pictured it. It's almost like if you took like a bassinet or something like that from like, and just you floated it with a little bit of a cover in the water. But they're both tevas. Batachmira ba chemer v'zafed, and it's covered in pitch and tar. Batasna v'teyeled, and the child is then put in it. Batasna b'sufal svada yor, and it's put along the reeds at the edge of the Nile River. V'teitatzavacho tomer achok l'deyam ayaselo, and Miriam is his sister is sitting from is standing from a distance, wondering what is going to happen with this. So the Gemara talks that, you know, she had nevuah and she wants to know what's going to be with her nevuah. But the simple explanation is that she's just watching the whole thing. And maybe she's running alongside it from a distance to see where will it go. Pazakei. V'teret ba'paro l'rchos alei or v'narotel l'chot al yadi or v'teret ha'teva v'toch ha'suf. So ba'paro goes down to wash in the river. And her young girls are with her by the edge of the Nile, and she sees the teva at the in the reeds. And she sends her one of her servants, and she takes it. Again, we're stuck with a lot of no names, right? There's no names here, but we've met so many people. We've met mom, dad, sister, Bat Paro, her Na'arot, her Amma, right? So why is it that we have no names mentioned at all here? But also, we'll see in Pasuk Vav, because there are no names, so there is times where it's very hard to distinguish who the person is. So let's take a look at Pasuk Vav. Vatiftach vatirei otayelet. She opens up the basket and she sees the child. And there is a young boy crying. And she feels bad for him. She pities him. And she says that this is clearly a Jewish child. Okay, so here is where we definitely have... What?
Quick question?
Yeah.
Does anyone make a comment? What you said earlier about Moshe being a good kid, does anyone compare the fact that he's crying here versus previous 3 months he wasn't crying?
I mean, I guess to a certain extent, yes, but I think there's a bigger question, which, Steve, thank you. You, like, led me in that direction. It says, v'inei nar boche, there is a young boy crying. So who's the young boy?
I think you brought this up, was it last week or the week before? Came up with the crying. Because he had that voice, you know, it was questionable. The whole bris question. We discussed this. Was it last week? The week before?
In Vayigash, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, the question: what is a nar, by the way? And how old is Moshe? Moshe is what, 3 months? What is a 3 month old in biblical terms?
I think there's a 3 years old, or I don't know.
Not a
nar. He's not a nar, so he'd be either like a yelet or a tino.
He's a yelet. Plus, the Gimel says a yelet.
Right. So he's a yelet. So why does it call him a nar? Nar is like a young boy. Like, usually when we think of nar, we're like, I don't know, that's like...
Yosef was
a young lad.
Yeah, Yosef was a nar. And how old was he? He was 17.
Yeah.
So who's this young boy that we're talking about? Now, because there's no names, we're left, you know, wondering. So the assumption is that who is this? It's Moshe, right? But could there be another young boy that's crying?
Aaron.
So the Baal Turim says that Na'ar Bocheh in Gematria equals Aaron Cohen. I always assume that these are correct, so I never like really test them out. And then sometimes someone's like, wait a second, is that really true? I don't know. Yeah, I had a really good one last week, and I like, as I was about to, I was like, there's no way, it can't possibly be. I'm like, the whole first word is 17, and there's a samach in the second one. I'm like, I don't know. But yeah, so let's assume that it's correct. Aaron HaKohen equals Nar Boche. Aaron is standing on the side, and he's crying. Well, look, his sister is also on the side. She's watching. He's younger. He's crying. So that's one possibility. But probably there's equally a possibility that he's crying. Why? I don't know. He's hungry. You know, Steve, he's a good kid, but he's, I don't know, at home he's fed and changed and cared for. And here he's in a dark basket going down the river. So he cries. Let's assume that it is, that it's not Aaron, that it's Moshe. So I think the Ramban asks, why is it Nar? I mean, all the Mefarshim deal with it. So one explanation, I think the Gemara and Sota says, is that he has a old voice to him, a maturity to him, even though he's like just a little kid. I don't know if anybody ever saw the movie Boss Baby, but like, you know, like the little kid in the suit who's got like that deep voice. Okay, so even though he's like, I don't know, a newborn. Okay, so that's I guess one possibility. But the Gemara is bothered by that because it says that's almost like a pigam in him. So if he has a pigam like that, then he should be like unworthy of being a leader. So Ramban says it's just normal. Right? It's just a normal way of having a of calling it. Nar doesn't mean like a young boy, but it just means someone who is little. Shari Aaron asks, what exactly is going on here? What is she doing? Why is she like curious about who the baby is? He gives an interesting explanation where he says that she looked in the basket to see if it was a boy or a girl. If it was a girl, she'd say, it's not Jewish. What is it? Some Egyptian lady had a baby and was like, shoot, this is not, right? I don't know. It's not the father, clearly. You know, I was having an affair with someone else. I got pregnant, and wait a second, look at this baby. There is no way that my husband is going to accept that this is his kid. So she stuck it in a basket and sent it down the river. It's the equivalent in 2024 of dropping your kid in the dumpster. We read stories like that every once in a while on the news. Same thing here. But if it's a boy, then she says, wait a second, that is very possibly a Jewish kid that was thrown down the river. And that she looks and says, oh, it's a boy. It must be b'nei nar boche. It's a male voice. And she feels back. She recognizes it's one of the Ivrim. Okay, pasuk zayin. V'tomer achotol v'aparo, eilech v'kardi lach yishai meinakim and evriyo v'tenik lach et hayelen. So she says, should I... the sister comes out and says, hey, should I find a meineket, someone to nurse the child? The Malbim says that the reason why she offers a Jewish nursemaid is because she says, I know it's going to happen. If it's done by an Egyptian, Egyptians hate the Jews, and they'll, if they figure out or assume it's a Jewish baby, they might kill it. But a Jewish woman is going to let it live. So Baparo says, yeah, go. So she goes and she calls the mother of the child. So she Baparo says, go take the kid and I will pay you for your job. And she takes the child. It seems like she takes the child home, which is really strange. Like, why wouldn't Yocheved, I could not find anybody that talks about it. Why couldn't Yocheved take the kid and have like a room in the palace and take care of the kid there? Like, it's a little strange that she's taking the kid home.
So she does.
But, so at the end, if you look at the next pasuk, like Dala Yalav Tveil Bat Paro, so the child grows up and she brings him to Bat Paro, Fahi Lala Bain. So, I mean, again, it could be that she brings him from one room in the palace to the other, but it seems, at least to me, to be more obvious that they're not in the same house. I think the Gemara says that she takes him home, but I just don't understand, like, why that would be. But, I don't know, nobody seems to be bothered by it. other than me, so maybe it's not such a good question. Vahila Labain, and it's a this kid is a child to her. Vatikrashmo Moshe Vatomer Kiminamai Mishitu, and she names him Moshe. Why? Kiminamai Mishitu, because she pulled him out of the water. Okay, so Moshe is an Egyptian name. So the Ibn Ezra says, Shem Moshe Mitur Gaman Milashon Mitzrayim B'Lashon HaKodesh. So the Ibn Ezra says, no, Moshe is still a Hebrew word. Minamayim Mishitiyu. Mishitiyu is also Hebrew. He was drawn out of the water. So the Ibn Ezra says that the name Moshe is translated from the equivalent in Egyptian. Vishmo B'Lashon Mitzrayim Hayat Munios. There's a typo on the Ibn Ezra in Sefaria. It says Munium, but if you look at the Ibn Ezra inside, like in the Kros Kedos, Munius. So his name is Munius. That's, I guess, an Egyptian name. So this is like in some book in Egypt, that is the name that Moshe had.
Did Bas Paro come up with a cover story for her family, how she has a new baby?
I don't know. She was pregnant. Yeah, it's a good question. No idea.
That may be why they sent her. Why she sent the baby away for? At some point,
how does that help? How does that help?
Then that's out a random kid. I don't know if adopted. Or, I don't know. I guess the first. Yeah.
Adopted. Adopted is a cover story. But I wouldn't think that Paro would want his daughter to have. I mean, this kid could be the future ruler. I'd be surprised if he'd be okay with a non-blood relative from his daughter.
Yeah, it seems like he is on the path to being like the leader one day. Yeah, it's a little bit of a hard one. I'm not sure what the cover story is. I guess at the end, the purpose of Tanakh is not to like give us all the details, but rather the purpose of Tanakh is to get us to like understand where Moshe's coming from. So it explains that Moshe's born, raised in Paro's house, and then rebels against that and opts to be more of a Jew than not. Okay, so that's the opinion of Ibn Ezra. Sfarno says, "Vatomer kimin amayim shitiu hatam shekrativ Moshe lo rot shimaleit et acherim hu." So the reason that he's called Moshe is to explain that he is going to save others. So min amayim mishitiu, he was pulled out of the water. If he was drawn out of the water, then his name should be Mashui. But the name Moshe reflects that in the future, he'll be drawing other people. So the Sfarno says that the lesson that the Torah is trying to teach us is that he is Moshe, that he's going, it's a prediction about the future, that he is going to help others. It is not a naming about what happened to him, how he was pulled out of the water. Okay, so We get some good details about who he is, how he's born, why he's named. We give a lot of credit to Batya. Vayihi bayamim ahayim vayigdal Moshe vayitzei al achav vayar v'sivotam vayar ish mitzri makei ish ivri me'achav. So what happens is some years pass, Moshe grows up and he goes out to his brothers. He sees their suffering. And what is the first thing that we see that we're told that he sees? He sees an Egyptian man that's hitting a Jewish man. He looks this way and that way and realizes that there is no man. He hits the Egyptian and he buries him in the sand. So it's interesting, we have the word ish three times in these two psukim. In the first pasuk, we're told that he sees an Egyptian man and a Jewish man. And then the next pasuk, he's told, "Vayarki ein ish." He sees that there is no man, but really there is a man. There's actually two of them. Who are they? The ish mitzri and the ish ivri. That's who he sees. So we actually did this chabura back in Tafshin Ayin Chet, so 6 years ago, where we shared an idea by Rabbi Riskin. So Rabbi Riskin says, what happens that they lose their status of ish? So he says the Egyptian, when you hit another person, when you beat another person, you lose your status of ish. And when you're a person that gets beaten up and you don't stand up for yourself, you also lose your status of ish. And I guess if you read like all the political analysis of today by those that are pro-Israel, like that's a big piece that people say, that like if Israel is to win the war, they have to continue to be strong. And if they're not, if they're going to say like, oh, okay, like we did enough and like we're going to kind of back down, so then they lose their idea of Ish. So definitely, you know, in Yana Deyoma. But here's another possibility. So let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi is going to tell us, Makei Yishivri. First, he's going to tell us who are these people. Malkei Uvirodeyu, he was beating him up all day long. Ubalasho Shlomi Badivri Haya. He is the husband of Shlomi Badivri. Benatani Nav Ba. So this Egyptian saw the, you know, knew, was beating up on the husband of Shlomi Badivri. And who is Shlomi Badivri? Balayla Hamido Votim Beto Vuchazari Nichnasa Labait Valishto. Shlomi Badivri was this woman who went out a lot, supposedly according to the Medrash. People saw her, and the Egyptian men were like, whoa, she's beautiful. So what happens? One night, this guy, this Egyptian guy, says, hey, you know what? I want to sleep with her. So he comes, knocks on the door, locks the husband outside, and goes in. And Kisfura Shahu Bala. And she assumes that the man that's now in her bed is her husband. And she sleeps with him. Chazar Ish Leveitov, and has a child, by the way. That is the child that the Mekalel and Emor. Chazar Ish Leveitov, Yergish Badavar. And then he goes home and realizes that something probably happened. When the Egyptian realized that the guy, that this man knew what happened when he was in her was in his house, so he beats up on him. Okay, so that's the story behind it. Probably the pshat is that there just is a random Egyptian guy that's beating up on a Jewish guy. Moshe looks and sees what happened in the house and what happened in the field. That's pshat. But the medrash is, Vayarkein ish atid latzeit mimenu shiit gayer. He looked and saw that no one in the future would convert from this ish mitzri. Right, we normally look at it and say, what actually happened is that he looks at this guy and sees that there's no future, nothing good will ever come out of him, so therefore he kills him. Okay, so that's a possibility. But perhaps there's two other answers that you can suggest. Rabbi Riskin says, Vayarki ein ish, Moshe looks around, sees there is no one willing to stand up. There are other people there. It's impossible to think that you're talking about a work site with hundreds of slaves and nobody sees it. What, that the guy went off to like a corner and beat up on him? It's hard to imagine that that's the case. But Moshe sees that no one wants to do anything. No one wants to say anything. They're all afraid. And Moshe says, okay, if there's no one else that's going to stand up, I will stand up and I will be the one to do it. That's Rabbi Riskin. Rabbi Daron Peretz says the following. I think it's an amazing, amazing answer. It says, Vayarki ein ish. It says, what's an ish? An ish is a person with humanity, right? So what happens? There are these two men fighting, and Moshe Rabbeinu looks and sees that there is no humanity in the Egyptian, because no one would be able to do what he's doing if he had a bit of humanity in him. I'm sure that everybody has heard Rachel Goldberg Polin, the mother of Hirsch. And that's her message constantly. She's like, we're going to have a lot of answering to do, and not us, the Jewish people, but like the world. How could the world not do anything when these terrible things have happened? Vayarki ein ish. The Egyptian is able to do that. So he realizes that there's no humanity in this person. And if there's no humanity in this person, there's nothing redeeming within him to save him. And perhaps that's actually how we can understand the next pasuk. So he sees two people that are fighting, and he says to him, "Why, you know, evil one, why are you hitting your friend?" And then pasuk yudalet vayomer misamcha leish sar v'shofet aleinu. So the one of them, I guess the hitter, turns to Moshe and says, "Who made you ish sar v'shofet aleinu?" Right. So ish again, we have the ish. In the first one, it was Vayarki Ein Ish, and here it says Misam Chole Ish. Perhaps the message that the guy is saying to Moshe is, who made you the moral conscience? Who made you the voice of humanity for the Jewish people? Okay, we got to get through the day, and getting through the day requires us to do whatever we got to do. Right? Who made you this moral voice that is able to tell us what we should or shouldn't do? So maybe that's how you could possibly understand the psukim. Okay, so what we had so far is we learned 14 psukim, and we had many, many different ideas and many different thoughts and many different pictures on the idea of who the Redeemer is, how he came about. And so the question is there perhaps another way of understanding these psukim? So I want to share with you Rabbi Sacks. Rabbi Sacks in Ethics, Essays on Ethics, so he suggests the following. Besides the fact that there are many unnamed people in our parak, if you think about it from the beginning of Parshat Shmot until the end of Parak Bet, we are going to meet a lot of people. They're all people that are instrumental in the success not only of Moshe Rabbeinu but the success of the Jewish people. And what's amazing is that there are six of them that are women. So let's go back to Parak Aleph. Who are the women in Parak Aleph? We don't have Parak Aleph here, but hopefully you.
Miriam, Bathsheba.
Right. So we have Miriam and Yocheved. We have the two, right? The two midwives, but they're not called Miriam and Yocheved there. What are they called?
Shifra and Pua.
Shifra and Pua. Right. So Shifra and Pua are in Parak Aleph. So they're the first women that we meet, and they are amazing because they are. I mean, we're not going to say that they're an ish, but they have the idea that Rav Daron Peretz, you know, would talk about of what an ish is. They do what's right, even though it's very hard. Morality always must prevail. Real morality. How are they able to stand up to Paro? Paro says to them, "We want you to be the hands of genocide, mass genocide of all boys in the Jewish people." And they say, "We refuse to do it." And that's an amazing thing because that's an indictment on all of civilization for thousands of years. People, tyrants will come and go, and what will happen is they'll, you know, recruit from all the local people. And then after the tyrants fall, because that is ultimately what always happens, what good does win, then, you know, the good people come after the bad people, and they come after all these, you know, wicked people, the henchmen that join. And what do they always say to them? Why did you join them? What's their answer? It's been the answer for thousands of years.
Just follow orders.
We had no choice. What would have happened otherwise? We would have been killed, right? So that's their answer. But Shifra and Pua tell us that no, there you could be officers. Maybe they were the chief operating people in the operating rooms of Egypt. And yet, what do they do? We're not doing it, right? We will not allow that to happen. So that's the first one. And then we move to Yocheved. Yocheved is the mother that's willing to have a child in this world, right? Imagine being willing to have a child in a world where you know that there is a more than likely chance that your child will die. Either they'll be thrown in the water, which would, you know, be an immediate death, or they're going to be a slave and suffer a long and more painful death. Yocheved is a heroine that she's willing to have a child in this world. She takes care of him and then comes up with a plan to save him. And then, of course, we have Miriam. Miriam, who stands there by the side of the river and watches what happens to her brother. But more than that, Miriam, according to the Gemara, stands up to her father. Her father divorced her mother, and that's Vayelachish Mibet Levi, Vaykacha Bat Levi. Rashi quotes the Gemara that says what? That he went and took her back. He had two children already. He remarried her. Why? Because Miriam comes to her father and says, "You're worse than Paro. Paro only wanted to kill the boys. You're going to kill the boys and the girls." I think the most incredible thing about this is that the dad actually listens to the daughter. Can you imagine your seven-year-old comes up to you and says, like, "Hey, you're totally doing your job wrong." I'd be like, "Who are you? You're 7 years old. You don't even understand the first thing about my job." And yet, that's what happens here. So that's you know, also notable. And then we have, we'll jump out of order, Tzipora, who is the wife of Moshe, that's willing to accompany Moshe back to Egypt, even though that is no place to raise a family. But of course, the most significant one to our perek is Batya. Batya, the daughter of Paro, she does what's right, even as Bat Paro. It could be that her self-sacrifice is even more significant than Shifra and Pua. Right? She's throwing it in the face of her father while living in the palace and potentially losing her status as the princess of Egypt. If you take a look at Divrei Hayamim Perek Aleph, Divrei Hayamim Aleph, Perek Dalet Pasuk Yud Chet. So it's an interesting pasuk. Vishtaha Yehudiya Yaldat Yared Avigdor Vet Chever Avi Socho Vet Yukutiel Avi Zanawach.
Ve'ela b'nei bitya ba'paro shelakach mared. And these are the daughters, these are the sons of Bat Paro that was taken by Mered. So I think that these are her sons. Yered, Avigdor, Chever, Avisocho, Yukutiel, Avizan Noach. Avigdor, by the way, is the name of Moshe Rabbeinu. Right, so that's...
Isn't Yered one of Moshe's names?
Okay,
let me tell you why I say that. I'm not making that up. Just this past Shabbos, somebody got an aliyah. I couldn't hear the name clearly, but after shul, I saw the kid's father. I said, "What's your son's name?" He said, "Yered." That was one of Moshe's names. I'm like, I didn't know that. I never...
So okay, Shkayach.
I don't know if he was right, and this pasuk, right, we know what Moshe's... He had seven names or something like that, but we don't think Yared was one of them. Maybe he's wrong about it, and he named this kid the wrong thing. I don't know.
No, it could be. So that's interesting.
Jordan Ginsburg is Yared.
That's who I'm talking about. He's the only one I ever heard of.
Okay, fine.
Right, you know what's interesting? His name is Jordan, because Yared translates in English to Jared. I got that in Queens College. I had some weird professor that, like, I don't know, was like a biblical scholar, even though he was teaching political science. So these are the sons of this woman. And what's her name? Bat Bitya. She's Bitya or Batya, who is the daughter of Paro. Ashalakach Mered, that was married by Mered. Who's Mered? So that's the interesting one. So Rashi says, Ashalakach Mered, Kalevu. Kalev ends up marrying Bat Paro. Kalev also ends up marrying
Miriam.
So yeah, that Tzat Meraglim, and he rebelled against Tzat Meraglim. So the Medrash says something amazing. The Medrash says that her name, how do we know her? She's Bat Paro, but she rebels against her father, and she treats Hashem's kid, who wasn't her son, like her own son. So Hashem says, I'm going to treat you like my daughter. And the Derech Eretz Zuto, which is another medrash, says that there are 9 people who enter Gan Eden in their lifetime, and she is in fact one of them. So Batya goes from Bat Paro to Batya, to the daughter of God. Says Rabbi Sacks, there's 6 women in our Parsha, and they are instrumental in creating and sustaining the Jewish people for years to come. So what's amazing is that in general,
who's the sixth?
Shifrin, Pua, Yocheved, Miriam, Batya, and Tzipora. Tzipora, we meet at the end of this perek, and she, you know, is willing to go back to Egypt.
Yocheved.
Right. Batya, and then Tzipora. So what we see is these great Jewish leaders, there have been Jewish women over the course of time that have been great Jewish leaders, but what's amazing is that they generally don't have a title. And he says that there is an idea that you could be a leader without a title. We're not used to that so much because we assume there's the Navi, there's the Melech, there's the Shofet, etc., etc. But sometimes a person could be a leader with no title at all. How? If they understand that morality first is the most important thing. Someone like that will be a leader. All 6 of these women, okay, maybe Shifra and Pua, not 100%, they have some sort of status or position. None of them really have a status, but they lead through their unbelievable actions, their courageous and brave things. And what I think is amazing is that if the Egyptian is one, Vayar Ki Ein Ish, these women prove that they have humanity in them in the darkest of times. And that, I think, really is perhaps the message of this perek, is that to be the leader, one has to maintain their humanity in the darkest of times, in the most challenging of situations. And if a person could do that, then ultimately they are deserving of the status of leader. All of these people fed Moshe Rabbeinu, whatever he needed to get his makeup as the leader of the Jewish people. And Moshe certainly maintains his humanity in the most trying of times, in both leading the Jewish people out and leading them into the edge of the land of Israel. Have a wonderful Shabbos.